Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hi, listener. You're on board for episode 22 of Sofeast's podcast. This is part 7 of our mini-series about vetting Chinese suppliers. And in this one, Renaud and myself will be discussing process and system audits. Are you ready to get started? Let's go.
Hi, Renaud. How's it going?
Hey, good, good. How about you? Full of energy?
Yes. Yeah, I am. Well, bit of a different time zone here, isn't it? Today's podcast is a continuation of the mini-series we've been doing on vetting Chinese suppliers. This is part number 7, and today I'm going to talk with you about factory process and system audits, if that's okay. The listeners who've been listening to the past episodes might remember in part 5 of China Supplier Vetting that we spoke about quality audits. Now, these are a little bit different to that. So could we start off by, if you could explain what a factory process and system audit is, please?
So it's not exactly different from a quality audit, actually, but in practice, in the way it is done, often is different. So when was that? Two episodes ago, we talked about the management system standards, right? Like ISO 9001 and the others. And third party auditors, when they come to, let's say, a factory, and then they check if they are in conformance with, let's say, ISO 9001, we'll tend to focus on a certain number of things. And when buyers actually do their own audits or set up their own audit plans for second party audits, they are quite influenced actually by these certification, third party types of audits. And that means that most what they would call QMS audits, quality management system audits or quality audits, tend to follow that pattern where there's a lot of focus on documentation. Do they have an approved supplier list, and how do they do to approve the suppliers that go into this, and how do they check over time if the suppliers keep giving satisfaction, and how do they communicate to the suppliers that exactly this is what they want, and is it very specific, to remove the chances that maybe there's misunderstanding and so on. And this is not bad. I mean, these are relatively good practices. I have nothing against that. But third party auditors tend not to be technical. So they have to pay a lot of attention to, a lot of different things and a lot of attention to paperwork without going very much in depth, right, into what exactly are they doing in the factory and does it make sense for their processes, right? So that's what most quality audits look like, right? Someone who comes, okay, so where's your documentation? And I ask you a few questions, some records about this, some records about that. I make sure it kind of all makes sense. Is it aligned with maybe what the buyer wants and their standard? Is it clear? And But actually not spending that much time on the factory floor, right? Mm. A tour of the warehouse and asking a few questions, a tour of the factory production area, same thing, talking to the purchasers and talking to different people. Okay, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. If a factory really is quite disorganized, they would definitely pick it up, if it's messy and dirty, if there's an obvious lack of discipline in the workforce, everybody doing things their own ways, or maybe they don't even have any guidelines, any instructions on how to how to do their work. I mean, all of this will be picked up, no worries. So it's not a bad way of catching these unreliable, you know, relatively high risk factories. Now, when we say a process audit, so these quality audits tend to be much more about the systems than the manufacturing processes, and they also don't go very much in depth in the new product development side of things, where if you really do a lot of things right at that new product development phase, you're going to have much, much lower risks, right? I think we discussed that in previous podcasts, so it's a good topic for an upcoming one. But so a process audit will tend to look at, okay, you know, let's really walk through the flow of the materials, and let's look at every step of the way and what can go wrong. You know, okay, oh, here they use a piece of equipment. Okay, well, let's look at this piece of equipment. You know, was it maintained preventively? Does it look clean? And does the person using it have the proper training? Maybe at, you know, proper work instructions. Is it very clear how to do the settings? Or there's an automation part of it. Okay, so what do they have the latest version of the automated program, and so on and so forth. Basically, you walk along the steps and you think of what could go wrong, and then you check, right? That's what we call process audit. And basically, when you look at any process, there's certain things that you can always ask yourself, you know. So what are the inputs, right? They get these wooden planks. Okay, this is the inputs that they buy from the outside. Okay, so like how do they check it, and how do they make sure it's fine, it's not too humid and so on, let's say. Okay, the right kind of wood and so on. What else do they use, you know? And let's say the process is going to be maybe cutting, right? So then you say, okay, who's going to do the cutting? Then you look at the people doing it, you know, do they seem to have sufficient experience, and have they had some proper training and everything? You look at what kind of equipment they use. Ah, this is a cutting machine. Okay, so then you can start to look into the condition of the machinery, the maintenance, and so on. Okay, how do they measure actually how they're doing it, and what the result is? You know, then you look at we check, you know, 1 out of 10 for the size with that whatever, that special caliper. Okay, caliper. Okay, what calibration records, and does it make sense, and how did you do it? Or internally, then let me check exactly the block gauges, and you know, you can keep going down and, you know, drill down and drill down and drill down, and what's the result, and you know, where does it go after that, and so on. So that's what we call a process audit, and it does take a little bit more of an engineering mind, or a little bit of more of a training, and a little bit more exposure to, you know, real world manufacturing, right? Where it's not just putting an auditor in a classroom and training him on how to do audits. I mean, if they've had no exposure in the past, they're not going to be very good at this game, because it's really all about thinking of what can go wrong. You know, it's looking at the risks, analyzing the risks, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it seems a little bit more involved perhaps than some of the quality audits in a way. And I'm not saying all quality auditors are just using a checklist and don't think laterally at all. But as you've said, for this, whoever's doing this kind of audit, whether it's you, the customer, or whether you're actually bringing in an outside auditor, they are going to need to really understand how things are manufactured and the types of processes in play. Otherwise, it's just not going to work, is it?
Well, I mean, manufacturing is manufacturing. You know, at one point, it's about getting some materials through a process, transforming it, and making sure that, you know, understanding what controls have to be in place to make sure that the output of the process is right. I mean, manufacturing is manufacturing. But if you have someone with zero exposure to manufacturing at all, well, that's going to be a bit tough. And then if you get someone who's always been in cut and sew factories, let's say, for example, I don't know, for backpacks, and you put them in a PCBA factory, and, you know, okay, look at the SMT and the reflow oven, and look at the automated inspection, and look at this and look at that. They're going to ask, you know, they can ask some of the right questions, but they're going to have to ask a lot of questions and try to understand on their own if the responses make sense or not. There's certain things that they're not going to pick up for sure, right? So they're definitely having had some exposure to that kind of process in the past does help. I mean, you know, having a good checklist also that's appropriate for that process also does help a lot. We've spent actually a lot of resources, a lot of time internally developing our own resources for some of the most common types of manufacturing processes that we audit. And that helps a lot also. But the, you know, process auditing is really a sort of a state of mind, you know, asking questions based on the risks that you perceive and so on. That can come in part from experience. That's good. But it's really about having an open mind and asking a lot of questions.
Okay. So with this in mind, what sort of businesses usually would you say need to perform this kind of process audit? Are they necessary for every business?
I wouldn't say that. If you open a Shopify account or you're going to try to sell something on Amazon, and you're going to buy you know, 1,000 pieces of this and 2,000 pieces of that, small orders, simple products, inexpensive, you're not going to go in depth into understanding all that. Just want to make sure, you know, it's going to be made in a factory where, like, no kids are working and right. Nothing is really too dangerous. And they sort of kind of know what they're doing. They have a process in place. It's not obviously messy or dirty. I mean, you can't really go very much in depth. And anyway, the suppliers might not even want you to come to audit or send an auditor. Because it's, again, it's very, very small orders. Now, if you purchase products, either you place large orders, so it's a lot of money is at stake. You really want to get down to a more in-depth analysis of the risks. And the beauty of process audits is that you point to some issues, and it's not about, hey, you're missing this and that in your paperwork. And then, of course, I mean, suppliers are kind of cynical about that. Okay, we'll just do the paperwork, send it back to you. This is more about, hey, well, you don't show respect to the product. You know, there's a PCBA inside this, and you're putting it in contact with non-ESD materials. You know, you know, there's a risk that everybody in the electronics industry knows that it might have a negative impact on the integrity of the PCBA, right? So, and then you push them to do something about it because the response is kind of obvious, right? So the beauty of it is actually you push them to improve, right? So I was going to say very large orders, definitely you want to go into the details and really understand what they're doing and push them to improve. And also, you know, high risk types of products, you know, in general, you also want to go down and understand the risks better, right?
What sort of product do you mean by high risk?
Things that are, you know, for kids, things that have a battery or are, you know, maybe even high voltage products that I don't know, maybe you know, in contact with food, just products that are used in an application where, you know, it might be life or death if they don't work properly. So that's a lot of products, right?
So really, really taking every opportunity to reduce risk in that case totally makes sense. Yeah. In this kind of audit then, is it possible to define what is typically checked?
Yeah, so I have kind of a list here that I wrote before. And so you again, you can go sort of freestyle and say, okay, I'm going to follow the materials step by step. And that's fine. Then you don't need to prepare anything before. You don't need to think. You just go through, and then you might find a lot of risks, a lot of issues, right? Just by observing. And if you have a lot of experience being around manufacturing and doing these kind of things, that, you know, that's great. Now, what kind of things typically are covered, or what do you want to look into? Well, still want to have a look a little bit at the management systems. You want to understand maybe the, you know, who's accountable for quality, for cost, for timing. You know, how do they make things visual if possible to kind of drive action and drive improvement and make sure they know when they're going in the right direction versus the wrong direction. That's one thing. As I mentioned before, so new product introduction, very important. Do they do risk analysis? Do they define a testing plan and then stick to that testing plan to confirm prototypes? You know, how do they spend more time trying to cover critical to quality sort of criteria, or do they just go at it, you know, mindlessly? Do they do a pilot run before going into mass production? You know, all these things and a lot of others are quite important. You know, how do they do the tooling? Do they do it in-house, or maybe they do it outside? Well, maybe they don't have the competency really to understand what's going on. Can they at least do a DFM on it? You know, there's a lot of things for the development of new products. And that's really extremely, extremely important, right? Then when it comes down to the manufacturing processes themselves, there might be certain things that are really important for that kind of process, right? And then you know that, and these are the process controls that you really want to see that they are paying attention to. For example, if it's plastic injection molding, a very, very common type of process here. I mean, not just here. What's really, really important? Well, first is, do they let humidity and temperature vary along the day and along the seasons? And that might be fine, but if you're buying really expensive, you know, high grade kind of parts, that might be a problem actually, because it allows a lot of variation to come into play, right? Mm-hmm. How do they make sure that, you know, they always follow the right cycle time, that is the right temperature, the right pressure, right? All of these things are quite important. How do they make sure that when they buy the polymer, that for example, the whatever the ABS in pellets, that it's really ABS? And if it's supposed to be virgin, how do they make sure that none of it has been recycled, right? You can ask these kind of questions, and you know that you already cover a lot of the issues, right? And when you ask, how do you make sure it's the right temperature? It's not just about looking at the gauge of the machine, but do they have also some other gauges that go in different parts of the mold? And then, as I said before, then you look, have they been calibrated and so on, right? How's the setup done? Is it documented? Is it done sort of, you know, this is like the master. Now that when you see that every time, bing, 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 you know, big alarm bells. Oh, no, no, we don't know. We don't document it. But like, you know, every day, the temperature, the humidity is a bit different. So this is the master. And like, he will do the setup and he knows how to do, you know, like it's extremely complicated. There's no way to reduce it to down to a formula. Mm. Well, we've heard that many, many times. And either it's a very, very specific and immature kind of process. And then you need to, there are ways. I mean, the worst thing you need to go with designs of experiments. But there are ways to reduce it sort of to a formula. But when you hear these kind of things, it's like, okay, zero scientific thinking here. Probably inconsistent levels of process controls, high risk. Mm. They say, yeah, it's based on our experience. We hear that all the time. In China, we hear that all the time. No, it's based on our experience. You know, we've been doing that for a long time. We know, we can feel it. Well, if you haven't really done tests and tried to learn from all that experience, it doesn't count for very much, unfortunately.
True.
You look at training for certain positions. It's really very, very important. And how do they maybe evaluate the staff that they hire? And if the competencies are not there, how do they do to develop the competencies, right? It doesn't have to be documented and everything. I know a lot of management system standards require records for these kinds of things. But the most important is, you know, ask some questions and see if they sort of know what they're doing and observe. And you will get a feel for that already many times, right? Equipment, wherever there's equipment, you need to look at how it's maintained. And it might be, you know, brand new or, you know, from 6 months ago, but maybe let's say it's a CNC machine, maybe the tooling, let's say the blade should have been changed already 2 months ago, you know, or it should have been sharpened. It's funny sometimes how people think. Remember that factory, they're doing a lot of CNC machining to cut parts of acetate, certain kind of cheap plastic. And we did a statistical analysis on the parts, and it's just crazy. Like, you know, extreme variation for some of them, and then some of them, like everything was outside of tolerance. So extremely bad. And we say, what's wrong? So we looked at the CNC machines and we asked some questions, and the guys were like, oh, but you know, this is made of steel and it cuts plastic. It's like, it's like my knife. When I cut the bread, I don't need to sharpen my knife. It's going to cut the bread. And I was thinking, whoa, you know, that's where you really need to be careful with, we have all the experience needed for that, right? If they don't think in a scientific manner, that's just, you know, it's just a huge red flag. That was an interesting moment. And basically what this points to is no plan for preventive maintenance. So they had very dull knives, basically blades, cuttings, plastic and making a mess, and they were not even thinking about that. And it probably shortened the lifetime of their CNC machines, created a lot of quality issues down the line, and even probably consume more energy than it should. So I mean, there's nothing positive from that. It's just laziness. There's no thinking, right? So anyway, but we see that so often, you know, this kind of lack of thinking, let's say. There could be also predictive maintenance, as I'm talking about maintenance, but, you know, meaning that they might have a way to monitor the certain parts of the equipment, maybe based on the noise, based on vibration, based on heat. Well, they can sort of see where things are starting to go bad, even when the operator himself cannot really perceive it, right? That's great when you can do some of that. And then you can already maybe purchase the spare parts, the replacement parts in advance. And then when you see that, you start to look closer. And at a certain threshold, you say, okay, we're not going to wait until we see the symptoms of this issue. I'm just going to do the maintenance, maybe change the part, and then start to run again and keep monitoring. That's great. That's great. And obviously, the opposite of predictive maintenance or preventive maintenance is reactive maintenance, where they are basically waiting for the equipment to show that it's in trouble. Very often it means they let the equipment go down, you know, break down. And that means a lot of quality issues, because maybe before breaking down, the equipment keeps making parts, but with a certain issue, right? And it really shortens the life of the machine. It's terrible. Plus, when it goes down and it's not planned, then it messes up the whole production schedule, maybe, right? So that's on the equipment side. When it comes to mostly manual work, you can look at, you know, common and likely kinds of mistakes. An operator takes the part, positions it the wrong way. Okay, well, maybe you should do some mistake proofing here. You know, maybe you need to give a checklist to the operator to go through that every time. Maybe, right? If they haven't given any thought to that, that's a serious problem. I mean, in China, there's a lot of factories where you see serious ergonomic issues also. The people are really not working in a good position. So, you know, of course it has an impact when you look at occupational health and safety. But if you just look at quality, of course it has an impact also. If they're not comfortable doing their work, it's not going to help quality. So there's a lot of things like this. And in the good factories, they might collect some statistics, collect some data, I should say, and pull some statistics out of it to really watch what's going on with their process. And that's, you know, that's not something we see every day, let's say, in China. It's actually really something that they like to avoid for some reason. They don't want to go into that. I mean, the measurement devices I mentioned before, quite important. You know, and all of this also can be checked at the level of the critical component suppliers. You buy metal parts, they're plated. It's extremely important that the plating look good. Well, then you're going to do the same at the plating workshop if they allow you to go there, right? That's an example. Or they buy batteries. Wow. And that's a lot of money, and that's high risk if things go wrong. Right? So same thing, you know, go and see the battery supplier. They make the cells. When they pack the cells, you know, packing the cells actually is a little bit of assembly work, because they might take 2-3 cells, 4 cells, put them into one battery pack, which in the end looks like one battery, and ask questions about the you know, again, what can go wrong? Well, these kind of things, you look at the battery management system, the BMS. Well, what happens if the battery really heats up a lot, you know, or what's going to happen? Are you going to stop the whole device or not? What happens when the battery gets down to 5%, 3%? Are you going to turn everything down, or are you going to keep going down to depletion? Well, the problem is if you let it go down to depletion and for some reason, these products are stored without being used for 3 months or 6 months. Well, next time you stop, you try to restart the device, it Ooh. Might not restart at all, right? So there's nearly no limit to the kind of questions you can ask, because again, it's mostly guided by your perception and analysis of the risks.
Sure.
And you look at the environment also, you know, the I remember once we were in a factory making wooden toys. Wow, that was bad. And for kids, right? In the US. And they had these cans of paint open, and they were using it to use, you know, the paint to spray it. And then we asked, okay, so these cans are open. The wind is there just under the windows, which are open. Now, what happens if something flies in there? Because we're in an industrial area, you know, something flies in there. It's sprayed right there, and then somewhere down the road, this specific part is tested chemically, and then people say, "Whoa, there's lead in that in that paint," you know. That's going to be a humongous recall for the retailer and for the brand. That might kill their company. I mean, that's why you try to really have an open mind and think of what can go wrong. And when you go to one of these organizations that don't have very mature processes, that have not really thought deeply about all this, or try to follow some general good practices, you know, typically you're going to find a lot of issues. But again, if they're making, I don't know, shoes, well, it's less risky than certain kinds of toys or brakes for trucks. You know, once I was in a factory that makes brake systems for trucks, and definitely, process audit extremely, extremely important. You really try to think of, you know, how to reduce all of the critical risks that you identified. That's really a kind of production where you want to be hands on. You really want to see what's going on, what they're doing. So yeah, that's, you know, in a nutshell, if I try to give an idea, that's what is typically checked in process audits. It does also involve some looking into the office, you know, office activities, but there's, you know, it's much more about looking at on the shop floor and going to see the and on the warehouse and so on, and going to the suppliers. Because really, when you think about it, if you have crappy or dangerous components and you assemble everything into a product, it's still crappy and dangerous. So you need to identify the high risk component sources, and then you need to go there and do the same kind of risk analysis. Some companies have developed their own checklists, and sometimes they are product category specific, let's say. And sometimes they call it GMP, good manufacturing practices, right? So for example, Costco, they have their own audits based on some GMPs, and it does push the auditor to look at some of these points, right? Without being, without calling for experienced engineers to do the work, which is sort of their purpose, I think. So certain things like, you know, is there proper labeling on the shop floor and in the warehouse about what is good material or good product versus what is defective? You know, is it everywhere very, very clearly labeled? And that's not a bad that's not a bad kind of question, but that's something where you really don't need to send someone who's very familiar with manufacturing, right? So yeah, sometimes you see GMPs, and they're sort of mini, sort of dumbed down, sort of process audits. Yeah, GMP audits.
Yeah, good. You mentioned earlier on, well, you've mentioned a load of different items that can be checked in this case. For example, and I mean, thinking back, you talked about, for example, ergonomic issues in the factory. So in this kind of case, if we think back to when we discussed the quality auditing, and certainly with third party audits, you know, these guys would go in and perhaps be fairly reluctant to give any kind of advice, because of the very nature of what they're doing is that's kind of anti-impartiality. But in
you mean
kind
the
of case,
third party? You mean the third party auditors, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in this case, if we're auditing a factory and we see something like ergonomic issues in the factory, which are clearly causing issues, they're slowing the operators down, they're making their lives more difficult, they're not doing as good a job as they can. In this case, would you expect the auditor to, you know, go and give some advice to the factory to make positive changes, or still not?
It depends on the context. If it's a third party auditor doing an ISO 9001 audit or ISO 14001 or whatever, they cannot raise a non-conformity. They cannot really mention it. They cannot really do anything, except if they see that it really has a direct impact on what they are checking, right? If they see that really prevents them from making good quality products, then yes, they can mention it. Otherwise, they cannot. For example, if they do 9001 sort of audit, if the same auditor does an audit based on ISO 14001 occupational health and safety management system, then definitely they will look into it, because it's really at the core of what they're auditing, and that will be an issue, right? If we look at second party auditing, which is more what we're discussing all along this episode, if it has an impact on quality, on speed, on keeping the good operators, yeah, of course they should mention it. Now, when you do an audit, I mean, usually you have a checklist, and usually there's a client who expects you to cover most or all of the points in the checklist, and you can't really spend a lot of time explaining what they should do. However, if you point it out and you show it to them, and if what they should do is really not obvious to them, the auditor should, can say something like, well, maybe if the table were higher, maybe if you put a fixture like that to help doing that, maybe if they didn't have to lift that weight like that, but maybe if it were already positioned like that, or, if they were doing lateral moves rather than moving stuff up and down, if they were always working within that certain angle in front of them instead of really turning around behind, maybe the material is not presented the right way. Yeah, they might say a few words about that just to open the eyes of the people. But in such a relatively simple and obvious case, if the managers of the factory don't want to understand, they will not understand anyway, right? If they want to understand, you just open their eyes, and then you let them do something about it when you're gone. Usually that's the way it would do, an auditor would do.
That makes sense to me. So if we are trying to find an auditor to carry out this kind of audit, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of the options, third party and second party. To be clear, where Sofiest is situated is second party, right?
Definitely. Basically on behalf of the buyer. Yes.
Sure. And in regards to a process audit checklist, which you've mentioned, do we have anything that we can give as an example?
Let me see. I wrote some posts about that in the past. We don't make them public because a lot of work went into that. They are internal documents, but it's basically every time we look at a process, we try to think, okay, the risks. First, do they have the capacity to make it, you know, quantitatively? How many pieces can they make, you know, based, and the buyer would put what kind of quantity, you know, of order into their factory, right? Then the materials that come in, you know, how do they check the materials and make sure, and how do they get it, and how do they store it, you know, and how long, and so on. Then there's the setup. When they start to do that process, which might be with, you know, purely with highly automated equipment, might be purely manual, maybe with just like tooling or somewhere in the middle, right? How do they set it up? How do they make sure at the very beginning that things are set up the right way, so and that the first pieces that come out are good, and so on? How do they maintain the controls that they should around that process? And that really depends from process to process, right? In a plating workshop, for example, you know, it might be, do they control the right types of chemicals in the bath? Do they check for the amount of solid, you know, in that specific bath? You know, there's a lot of things. Do they use the right solution? Do they, you know, when they put the metal pulse into it, are they already well, you know, clean? How do they clean it? And then when they position the part, do they take the geometry into account, and so on, so that the plating is done the right way? You know, the parts, the way they position each one and versus the other. Do they actually check if the current between the anodes and cathodes is sufficient and is as it should be, right? Or is there a lot of variation? There's a lot of things like that. And obviously, at the end of it is, how do they check, you know, the plating, the appearance of the plating? How do they check the thickness, you know, and the consistency of the thickness on the parts at different places on the part and on different parts? How do they check the adhesion? How do they check whatever, you know, maybe the resistance to human sweat? Or it really depends on the kind of application here that you're looking at. You might look at, as I mentioned before, you know, the human resources, you know, their competence to handle that process. You might look at the equipment and is it the right kind of equipment, and is it maintained the right way, and is it set the right way, and so on. All of the measurement and testing devices, equipment. Again, some of them might need to be maintained, and they need to be maybe calibrated or verified. It depends, right? Is this done systematically, right? Mm. So there's a lot of things around the process, but that's in a nutshell really what an auditor tends to look at. Yes.
Great. And if I can find any of the blog posts that you're talking about, I'll be sure to link to those in the show notes as well. That's a great introduction into this kind of auditing. Next time, we will be speaking about factory testing facilities in part 8 of China Supplier Vetting when we cover that in the podcast. So look out for that one. And in the meantime, thanks for catching up with me today.
Hey, thanks, Adrian. It was a good one.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.